Thank you, Jay. I'm going to change gears a little bit. What I'm going to be talking about is a class of chemicals which have very high vapor pressures and low absorption. So these are soil fumigants. They tend to move very readily in soil and can have problems in terms of being emitted into the atmosphere. But basically, we've been conducting large-scale field experiments in the San Joaquin Valley for the last 4 or 5 years, looking at different ways to try to reduce emissions of fumigants from soil. What I'll be describing is one of the experiments we were looking at where we were using organic amendments as a way to mitigate emissions. Soil fumigation is very important for growing crops. For example, if you you know, there are a number of organisms that can harm crops, make it so that farmers cannot get good yields or good quality produce. For example, Fusarium is one that can impact tomato. Now, this is what you want, and this is what happens if you allow these pests to exist in soil. Soil fumigation will kill nematodes as well as Fusarium. Fumigants also have a potential to degrade regional air quality. This can be from the toxic material itself, or it could be fumigants that are emitted into the atmosphere contribute to the VOC loading, which can produce tropospheric ozone. There's rules now about how much ozone there can be in the atmosphere, and state and federal regulations are starting to put restrictions on fumigant use. For example, in the Ventura area where they conduct a lot of, or where they grow a lot of the strawberries, they banned the use of fumigants for a short while because of problems with not meeting ozone levels. That has since been eased back a little bit, so there's some time to try to come up with some solutions, but clearly the growers are becoming quite concerned that fumigants will not be available. So we've been looking at different ways to reduce emissions for quite a long time, probably 10 or 15 years. We categorize these into three different categories. One is trying to reduce emissions by improving containment. That would be doing something to the surface of the soil that makes it so the chemical can't go from the soil into the atmosphere, like virtually impermeable films, water seals. Another way to approach this is looking at soil amendments. This would be adding something to the top layer of the soil that degrades the chemical as it's moving towards the atmosphere. The idea is to restrict this degradation at the surface so that it does not impact the pest control deeper in soils. And this is one of the things I'll be talking about today is using organic material for this purpose. So we've also looked at using ammonium thiosulfate, and the other methodology for reducing emissions is improved delivery systems. So this slide kind of gives you an overview of some of the background. Focusing on this slide down here, 1,3-dichloropropene, that's a chemical that we studied in the field site. This is some laboratory data that Jay Gahn collected several years back, where we looked at organic material and what its effect on emissions would be. And as you can see from where the yellow circle is, you can get 40% to 50% reduction in emission by using organic amendments. This would be done in the column study, so we wanted to take this out to the field and see if it would work there as well. So this slide shows our study goals. We conducted this field experiment to obtain cumulative and period averaged emission rates from soils that have been amended with composted municipal green waste. This material was obtained from Southern California in a city in the LA area. For the cities, the green waste is something they have trouble disposing. What they like to do is have it shipped up into the agricultural areas and used as a soil amendment. The grower that we worked with accepted this material because he had some soil tilth problems in a field, and so they shipped it up there, removed any debris that was in there, incorporated it into the soil, and a year later we conducted our experiment. We also wanted to compare different methods to estimate emissions, and we also wanted to look at whether it would be possible to estimate total emissions using laboratory experimentation as opposed to this large-scale field work. The field work is very complicated, very expensive, very difficult to do. And I think if you're trying to develop regulations, you're going to have some problems with using field data because there's so many factors that are changing with each experiment. If you do things in the laboratory, you can isolate one particular process or one particular feature of the fumigation. For example, if you wanted to study depth effects, you could make that the only thing that varies. And then we also wanted to look at whether, if you look at laboratory collected data, field plot, or simulation, do you basically get the same total emission value? This is our field site. We had two fields in this particular experiment. One had an irrigation treatment for reducing emissions, and then the one that I'll be talking about is the one that's marked with organic. That's with the field site that the data I'll be showing was collected from. This is a picture of the setting. You can see there aren't any trees, so when we do our emission measurements, we're not impacted by barriers. And this inset here shows the wind direction diagram. Generally during the day, it's coming from the north to the south. At night or during low wind speed periods, there can be some other directions involved. But basically, the winds come from the north. We use three methods to estimate emissions. Actually, we have another methodology, but I don't have any data to show you on that. But basically, the aerodynamic method, integrated horizontal flux and theoretical profile shape, they use the kind of data that's shown over here with gradients of wind speed, of concentration, and temperature. We also collected a variety of meteorological measurements and soil measurements so that we'd have information needed to do modeling at some point. We conducted our study for 16 days, continuous monitoring, so we didn't have any gaps in the data. Collected air concentrations using charcoal sampling tubes. And it does generate quite a few samples doing it like this, because we had to have measurements in the center of the field at six heights to be able to get the gradient. So it ends up generating quite a lot of sampling tubes. Okay, I'm going to now talk about the results. This slide here just shows a little bit of a few of the activities we were involved in. These are some of our sampling masks, and here's another sampling mask. We have to collect wind speed. It's really quite involved. We had 10 or 12 people out there for most of the 16-day period. Okay, soil conditions. Basically, the only thing to notice in this slide is that for fumigation, you need to have a somewhat moist soil. In this case, we had about 20% moisture content throughout the profile, except at the very surface where they do a disking operation that tends to make the soil have a lower bulk density and a little bit drier. This slide shows atmospheric concentrations. This is kind of is some of the basic data that's needed to estimate the flux, since you're looking at the gradients in the concentration. But basically, we were seeing 400 micrograms per meter cubed at the 40 centimeter height in the middle of the field. We also had data surrounding the field that could be used in essence for risk assessment, and it also can be used for another methodology for estimating emissions. So this is really the primary data we were after, was the emission rate of 1,3-D. I've got the three different methods shown in each of these graphs, and on this scale is the flux density, or the volatilization rate, emission rate. These would be the period values for the first 7 days. I didn't extend it out to 16 days because they were pretty much zero beyond this point. If you'll notice the scale, this one has 25 micrograms per meter squared per second, and these other two are 5. And we've conducted 5 experiments out there now, and this seems to be happening in all of our experiments. The aerodynamic method tends to always be have higher period emission values than the integrated horizontal flux and the theoretical profile shape method. But if you take these 3 points and remove them, you would see that if you draw a line through here on 5, you would see that the other values seem to be quite a bit more similar to the other methodologies. So what I suspect is happening is this method, aerodynamic method, requires determining of the atmospheric stability, which has an effect of either suppressing emissions or enhancing the estimate of emissions. And I think what's happened is that these 3 values are unduly influenced by that stability term. And the, since we don't have measurements in the field to actually measure the atmospheric stability for this experiment, we're using literature values, there's really no guarantee that those values are, that the methodology that we use is the correct one for this particular site and this particular experiment. But to obtain this data in the field, you know, we don't have the instrumentation and it would be quite difficult. So then the one other aspect of our experiment was to see if we could get the same value for the cumulative emissions. This would be the integrating the period values over the course of the experiment. So I have a postdoc working with me that is conducting similar experiments in the laboratory where we take field soil, we pack the column so that the soil layering is preserved. We bring the deep soils down at the bottom, the surface soils at the top. We insulate the columns, and this is in a controlled temperature room, so we can adjust the temperature of the room so that the soil temperatures match what we observed in the field. And then we have flux chambers on top of these columns, and we measure the emissions over the course of the experiment. And what I'm showing is cumulative emissions with time. These the circles are the measured values, and this line here is the laboratory value. And as you can see, in terms of total emissions, the number is basically the same as what we observed for the average of the three methodologies that I just showed you. There is a little bit of difference. This would be basically differences in the period averaged values at the beginning of the experiment. But overall, this tends to suggest that you can use laboratory information to obtain cumulative emissions, which is something the regulatory community wants. And this can be done much less expensive way. It's much easier. And when you're looking at one particular factor of a fumigation process, you're able to isolate that from all the interferences, for example, like different climates, different soils, etc. We also measured soil gas emissions. This actually shows both experiments. And if you look at the 25% level, you can see that by adding this organic material to the surface, it didn't really impact the gas concentrations in the soil. So the fumigation would not have been compromised by adding the organic material to the surface. This slide is a summary of the different methodologies that we used. In the laboratory, we only looked at cis-1,3-dichloropropene, and basically the aerodynamic method had a 10% emission rate total, and the other two were right around 4%, and if you average them, you'll get the basically 6%. So in essence, it looks like, well, there's two things that are important in this slide. One is that the laboratory method matched the field values, and the second important point is that generally speaking, for this chemical, you would expect emissions of about 30%, 30 to 35 in a field similar to the one we were in. What we saw by using the organic amendment, values that were quite a bit less than that. We also have done some laboratory work where we did not have organic amendment, and we also saw a 30% emission rate. So it appears that this does seem to reduce emissions considerably. So in summary, you know, 1,3-D emissions were reduced by adding this composted green waste material in the previous year. I know that there are other studies that have been done where they add organic material that don't see these kind of reduction in emissions, and we actually have data of our own in field plots that where we add like manure and we don't see a 70% emission. So I don't know exactly whether this is because it was added a year before and had time to be worked into the soil, or whether it had something to do with the dryness of the surface layer affecting the increasing vapor adsorption, which stopped the emission rate. Laboratory experiments that we conducted basically gave us the same results. Now, we've had laboratory experiments for the irrigated treatment, for a just a standard, the control treatment, and for this treatment, and in all three cases, the values are within a few percent. And also, I guess the final conclusion would be that this method does offer a simple, low-cost approach to reducing emissions. It also provides cities with a way to dispose of organic material that they have in excess. And it also provides the grower with material that can enhance fertility and tilth of the soil, as well as reducing emissions. So with that, done. Thank you.
Technically, we're into the break time, but I guess for those of you who have questions, you can hang around. So do we have questions for updates?
I saw one of your slides, the soil gas concentration profile. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You've got 100 centimeter depth, so you have some higher concentration, but if depths are above it, like a near zero.
Right.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, I suspect that that's more issues with the sampling. I mean, when you're collecting the samples, you put in probes down into the soil to try to get to the depth of that you're interested in, and oftentimes they'll get plugged with, like they have little openings that bring the gas into like a stainless steel tube, and we've had trouble with plugging. So I look at that as when you see things that are kind of unusual, it's just a sampling problem. But I didn't want to just, even though I don't believe that that's giving you the real concentration at that depth, I don't want to just throw that point out, so I show it.
Yeah, but there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sampling. Like I say, these field experiments are very difficult. There are a lot of things that can make it problematic for getting data that you can depend on for developing regulations.
Yeah. Done. There was green waste mostly the clippings from the city residents and
right. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. In Southern California, at least in Riverside, yeah, we have a big green trash can that we put our grass cuttings, our tree cuttings. It's taken somewhere. They shred it up, compost it. And then a lot of times they'll sell it to like Home Depot as organic material. But there's much more green waste generated than they know how to get rid of. So I know the city really would like to see the growers take it. And the growers like it, except the one complaint this grower had was that there was a lot of you might say, trash in there, plastic and other things. And so the city shipped it up there for free and had paid for a bunch of workers to go through this material after it was spread on the field and pull out all the plastic and things like that. So he said that if it was clean when it arrived, he would be very happy to take it any time. But if it's dirty with a lot of plastic, he said he doesn't really want it. Ming Shen?
According to my opinion, on a large scale, a beginning of composted green waste is not economical and not practical. It's relatively expensive.
Well,
do we think that it is more friendly that the farmers can employ the carbon heating in the summer fall or some special period of time, that they can grow the cover crops. Then in covering the cover crops to the soil, and in the following season, they can fumigate the soil to kill those.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, if you want to increase organic material, I mean, the growers do, after they harvest, they do turn the whatever's left into the soil. So when we did our irrigation study, it would have been in a field that had the remaining plant material turned into the soil, and it would have been degrading. But I think you might need more. And the other thing we've noticed is that the type of organic material may play a part. I mean, we've had mixed results about manure. I mean, we get some cases we get good situation. But, it could be that the fact that this was composted, and the way it was handled, that might have played a part. Because 70% emissions, I mean, this is a very large reduction in emissions, and that's kind of unusual. I agree that moving a lot of green waste up into the Central Valley would be cost prohibitive, except that the cities have to get rid of this stuff, and they're willing to bear the cost of transporting it, and that's where most of the cost would be. So as long as the cities are willing to pay for it, from the grower's perspective, it's free. you know. And so I think it actually would work, because what'll end up happening is that the municipalities are going to be paying for the transportation costs. So, for example, when I get my utility bill and there's a trash bill in there, in part of that bill is going to be the cost of moving things up to the Central Valley.